Chapter 8. The Duel of the Professor and the Poet. At the same moment that consciousness left Stiopa in Yalta, or around 11:30 in the morning, it returned to Ivan Nikolaevich Homeless, who awoke from a long, deep sleep. For a while, he tried to determine how he had ended up in an unfamiliar room with white walls, with a curious bedside table made of some bright metal, and white blinds that betrayed hints of the sun on the other side. Ivan shook his head, ascertained that it did not ache, and remembered that he was in a clinic. This thought brought with it the recollection of Berlioz's death. But today it did not shock Ivan as much. After a good night's sleep, Ivan Nikolaevich became calmer and thought more clearly. For a while he lay still in the pristine, soft and comfortable spring bed. Then Ivan noticed a bell button next to him. By habit of touching things without need, Ivan pushed it. He expected some sort of ringing or a person, but something entirely different happened. A matte cylinder lit up at the foot of his bed with the sign, "Drink." After displaying this for a while, the cylinder began to turn until "Nurse" appeared on it. Naturally, the clever cylinder fascinated Ivan. "Nurse" was replaced by "Call the Doctor." Ivan spoke, unsure of what to do with the cylinder next. By a stroke of luck, he pressed the button again at the word "attendant." The cylinder rang quietly in response, stopped, and shut itself off. A pleasant, plump woman in a clean white coat entered the room and said to Ivan, "Good morning." Ivan did not respond, deeming a greeting inappropriate under the current circumstances. After all, to throw a healthy man in a clinic and then act like that's the way it ought to be. Without losing her benevolent expression, the woman raised the blinds at the single push of a button, causing the sun to flood the room through a lightweight, wide-mesh grating that stretched all the way to the floor. A balcony appeared on the other side of the grating, beyond it the weaving riverbank, and on the other side of the river a jolly pine forest. "Time for a bath, if you please," the woman invited. And one of the inner walls moved apart at the touch of her hand, revealing a bathroom with a wonderfully equipped lavatory. Though he had resolved not to speak to the woman, Ivan could not resist. Seeing a broad stream of water pour into the bathtub from a gleaming tap, he said sardonically, "Would you look at that? Just like the Metropole." "Oh, no," the woman said proudly. "Far better. They don't even have equipment like this abroad. Scientists and physicians come here specifically to look at our clinic. We host foreign tourists every day." Upon hearing "foreign tourist," Ivan immediately recalled yesterday's consultant. Ivan's face darkened. He frowned gloomily and said, "Foreign tourists. How you all adore foreign tourists. They come in all sorts, by the way. I met one yesterday, for instance. Some treat he was." He almost began recounting the story of Pontius Pilate, but contained himself, realizing that the woman had no use for his stories and could not help him anyway. The newly clean Ivan Nikolaevich was given positively everything a man might need after a bath. An iron shirt, underwear, and socks. That was not all. Opening a wardrobe door, the woman pointed inside and asked, "What would you prefer, a robe or some jammies?" Forcefully attached to his new residence, Ivan nearly threw up his hands at the woman's audacity and jabbed his finger silently at a pair of crimson flannel pyjamas. Following this, Ivan Nikolaevich was led down an empty, noiseless corridor and into a room of gigantic proportions. Deciding to treat everything in the wondrously equipped building with irony, Ivan immediately christened the room the Mechanized Canteen. The name was well-deserved. Here stood cabinets and glass cases full of shiny nickel-plated implements. There were extremely complicated chairs, bulbous lamps with gleaming reflectors, massive amounts of glassware, gas burners, electrical cords, and other appliances of unknown purpose. Three people set upon Ivan. Two women and a man, all wearing white. First, they led Ivan to a table in the corner, evidently intending to interrogate him about something. Ivan considered his situation. He had three options. The first tempted him immensely. Throw himself at all these lamps and intricate gadgets, bash them all to high hell, and thus express his protest at the unnecessary detainment. But today's Ivan was already significantly different from yesterday's Ivan, and the first alternative seemed dubious. They were liable to solidify in their notion that he was a violent lunatic. Thus Ivan rejected the first option. There was another. Immediately begin telling them about the consultant and Pontius Pilate. However, yesterday's experiences had demonstrated that his tale tended to be either received with disbelief or else perversely misinterpreted. Accordingly, Ivan rejected this choice as well, settling on a third. Withdrawal into proud silence. This proved impossible to fully accomplish, and willy-nilly he had to answer an entire series of questions, though he did it curtly and crossly. Ivan was asked about positively everything that ever took place in his life, down to the time he had scarlet fever 15 years ago. Once the sheet of paper was full of Ivan's information, it was turned over, and the woman in white began to ask about his relatives. The session descended into tedium. Who died, when, what of, did they drink a lot or have venereal diseases, and so on. In conclusion, they asked him to describe yesterday's events at Patriarch's Ponds, but without overly harassing him or expressing surprise at the mention of Pontius Pilate. Then the woman yielded Ivan to the man, who approached him differently and without any questions. He measured the temperature of Ivan's body, took his pulse, and looked at his eyes while flashing some sort of light at them. Then the third woman came to the man's aid, and together they jabbed Ivan in the back with something, though not painfully, drew symbols on his chest with the handle of a tiny mallet, tapped his knees with the same mallet, causing Ivan's legs to jerk, pricked his finger and drew a blood sample, poked him in the elbow joint, placed rubber bracelets on his arms. Ivan could only smirk bitterly to himself, thinking of how strangely and foolishly it had all turned out. To think of it! He wanted to warn everyone of the danger in the person of the unknown consultant intended to capture him, and instead, all he managed to accomplish was to end up in some mysterious room going over a bunch of nonsense about Uncle Fyodor, who had been binge-drinking back in Vologdar. Unbearably foolish. At last, they let Ivan go. He was escorted back to his room, where he received a cup of coffee, two soft-boiled eggs, and buttered white bread. After eating and drinking all that had been offered, Ivan decided to wait for some sort of superior at this facility, and then to wring some respect and justice for himself out of that person. Ivan's waiting bore fruit very soon after breakfast. Suddenly, the door to Ivan's room opened, and a multitude of people in white coats stepped inside. Ahead of them walked a man of about 45 years of age, clean-shaven, like an actor, with pleasant but very piercing eyes and courteous manners. The whole entourage showed him tokens of attention and respect, which had the effect of making his entrance look very ceremonial. Just like Pontius Pilate, it occurred to Ivan. Yes, this was undoubtedly the superior. He sat down on a stool while all the others remained standing. Dr. Stravinsky, the sitting man introduced himself, looking amicably at Ivan. "Here you are, Alexander Nikolaevich," a man with a neat goatee said quietly, and handed Ivan's densely written chart to the boss. "They've got a whole case sewn up on me," thought Ivan. Meanwhile, the boss ran his trained eyes over the chart, mumbling, and exchanged several words with the people around him in a little-known language. "Speaks Latin, too, like Pilate," Ivan thought unhappily. A single word made him jump, and it was schizophrenia. Alas, already mentioned yesterday by the accursed foreigner at Patriarch's Ponds, and now repeated by Professor Stravinsky. "He knew this, too," Ivan thought anxiously. The superior had evidently made a rule of agreeing to and delighting in anything those around him said, and expressing this sentiment with the words, "Splendid, splendid." "Splendid," Stravinsky now said, handing the chart off to somebody, and addressed Ivan. "You are a poet."
"A poet,"
Ivan replied grimly, and for the first time in his life felt an inexplicable revulsion to poetry. His own verses popped instantly into his head, and he found them oddly unpleasant. Wrinkling his face, he asked Stravinsky in turn, "You are a professor?" Stravinsky bowed his head with accommodating courtesy. "And you're the boss here," Ivan continued. Stravinsky bowed to that as well. "I need to talk to you," Ivan Nikolaevich said meaningfully. "That's why I'm here," Stravinsky replied. "Here's the problem," Ivan began, sensing that his hour had come. "They're making me out to be a madman, and no one wants to listen to me."
"Oh, no. We'll hear you out with the utmost attention," Stravinsky said in a serious but calming voice. "And we certainly won't let anyone make you out to be a madman."
"So listen, then. Last night, at Patriarch's Ponds, I met a mysterious person, perhaps a foreigner, perhaps not, who knew about Berlioz's death in advance and personally saw Pontius Pilate."
The entourage listened to the poet silently and motionlessly.
"Pilate? Pilate, the one who lived in the time of Jesus Christ?" Stravinsky asked, peering at Ivan.
"The very same."
"Uh-huh," said Stravinsky.
"And this Berlioz fellow died under a tram?"
"Exactly. I was there when he was murdered by the tram on the Patriarchs, while this mysterious man..."
"Who knew Pontius Pilate?" asked Stravinsky, evidently possessing vast insightfulness.
"That's the one," Ivan confirmed, studying Stravinsky. "So, anyway, he said in advance that Anushka had spilled the sunflower oil, and he slipped on that very spot. How'd you like that?"
Ivan inquired meaningfully, hoping to achieve a great effect with his words. But the effect did not come, and Stravinsky posed a very simple question. "And who is this Anushka?" This question upset Ivan slightly, and his face twitched.
"Anushka is completely unimportant here," he said, distressed. "Hell knows who she is, some idiot from Sadovaya. What's important is that he knew in advance about the sunflower oil, you see? Do you understand?"
"I understand perfectly," Stravinsky solemnly replied. Touching the poet's knee lightly, he added, "Do not worry, and go on."
"Going on,"
Ivan said, trying to match Stravinsky's tone, and knowing from bitter experience that only calm composure would help him.
"So then, this horrible character, and he's lying about being a consultant, possesses some incredible power. For example, you can chase him all you want, but you can never catch up. And he's got this odd little couple with him, just as good, but in its own way, some tall guy with broken glasses, and also this black cat of incredible size who can ride a tram by himself. Moreover..."
Uninterrupted by anyone, Ivan spoke with increasing passion and conviction.
"He was personally present on Pontius Pilate's balcony. There could be absolutely no doubt of it. I mean, what's going on here, huh? He needs to be arrested immediately, or else he'll cause untold harm."
"So that's what you're trying to accomplish, to get him arrested. Have I understood correctly?" Stravinsky asked.
"He's smart," thought Ivan. "You've got to admit that even among intellectuals, you can find a few folk of rare intelligence. No denying that."
And he answered,
"Absolutely right. And how could I not try? Just think about it. But instead, I am being forcibly detained here, flashed with lamps, bathed in tubs, grilled on something to do with Uncle Fadia. He's long since passed away. I demand to be released immediately."
"Well, that's splendid."
"Splendid," Stravinsky replied. "Everything's been cleared up. Indeed, what is the point of keeping a healthy man in a clinic?" "Very well. I will discharge you from here immediately if you tell me you are normal. Not prove, merely tell me. So then, are you normal?" Complete silence fell, and the fat woman who looked after Ivan in the morning glanced reverently at the doctor, while Ivan again thought, "Positively smart." He found the professor's offer quite appealing. However, he wrinkled his forehead, thought diligently for quite some time before answering, and at last said firmly,
"I am normal."
"Well, that's just splendid," Stravinsky exclaimed with relief. And if so, let us proceed logically. Take yesterday. Here he turned and was immediately handed Ivan's chart. While searching for the unknown man, who introduced himself as an acquaintance of Pontius Pilate's, you took the following steps. Stravinsky began counting on his long fingers, taking turns glancing at the chart and at Ivan. Pinned an icon to your chest? Did this happen? It happened, Ivan agreed gloomily. Fell off a fence, hurt your face, right? Appeared at a restaurant in your underwear, holding a lit candle, and beat up somebody there. You were brought to us, tied up. Once here, you called the police and asked them to send machine guns. Then attempted to jump out of the window, right? My question is, acting in such a manner, is it possible to capture or arrest anybody? And if you are a normal person, you will say it yourself, no way. You wish to leave? Be my guest. But allow me to ask, where do you intend to go from here?
To the police, of course, answered Ivan,
but with less conviction and feeling a little lost under the professor's gaze. Right away? You won't stop by your apartment? Stravinsky asked quickly.
No time to stop while I go traipsing about apartments. You'll slip away.
I see. And what is the first thing you'll tell the police?
About Pontius Pilate,
Ivan Nikolaevich replied, and a smoky haze fell over his eyes.
Well, that's just splendid,
exclaimed the vanquished Stravinsky, and turning to the man with the goatee, commanded, Fyodor Vasilievich, please release the citizen back into the city. But leave the room free, and do not change the linen. In 2 hours, Mr. Homeless will be right back here. All right, then, he said to the poet. I'm not going to wish you luck, because I don't believe in your luck for one iota. See you soon. He got up, and his entourage stirred.
On what grounds will I be back here?
Ivan asked nervously. As if he had been expecting the question, Stravinsky sat right back down and spoke. On the grounds that as soon as you show up at the police station, in your long johns, and tell them you met a man who personally knew Pontius Pilate, you will be immediately brought back here, and you will again find yourself in this room.
What do long johns have to do with it?
Ivan asked, looking round in confusion. Mostly it's Pontius Pilate, but also the long johns. After all, we are going to take back the hospital dress and give you your own clothes, and you were brought here in long johns. At the same time, you had no intention of stopping by your apartment, even though I hinted at it. Then comes Pilate, and it's a done deal. At that moment, something strange happened to Ivan Nikolaevich. It was as if his willpower had dissolved. He felt weak and in need of advice.
So what do I do? He asked, this time timidly.
Well, that's just splendid, Stravinsky replied. That is a most reasonable question. Now, let me tell you what actually happened to you.
Yesterday, someone badly upset you and frightened you with a story about Pontius Pilate and some other things. And so you, a stressed, worn-out man, went around town telling everybody about Pontius Pilate. Quite naturally, you were taken for a madman. Your salvation lies in but one thing, complete relaxation, and you absolutely have to stay here.
But he needs to be caught!
Ivan cried, now pleading. Very well, but why run around on your own? Relay all your suspicions and accusations against this man in writing. Nothing would be easier than to send your statement where it needs to go, and if, as you believe, we are dealing with a criminal, then everything will be straightened out very soon. Only one condition. Do not strain yourself, and try not to think of Pontius Pilate. Anybody can cook up a story. Not everything's to be believed.
Understood, Ivan declared resolutely. Please issue me a pen and paper.
Give him paper and a small pencil, Stravinsky commanded to the portly woman. But I do not recommend you write today, he said to Ivan.
No, today, definitely today,
Ivan cried anxiously. All right, but do not strain your head. If you don't get it out today, you surely will tomorrow.
He'll get away!
Oh, no, Stravinsky protested confidently. He won't go anywhere. I vouch for it.
And do remember that we will help you in every way possible.
For without help, you won't get anywhere. Do you understand? Stravinsky asked meaningfully and suddenly took Ivan Nikolaevich by both hands. Holding them in his own and staring directly into Ivan's eyes, he repeated,
We will help you here. Do you understand? We will help you here. We will help you here. You will feel better.
It's quiet here. All is calm.
We will help you here.
Ivan Nikolaevich yawned suddenly, and his expression softened.
Yes, yes,
he said quietly. Well, that's just splendid, Stravinsky concluded as usual, and rose. Goodbye. He shook Ivan's hand, and already on his way out, turned to the man with the goatee and said, Yes, and try the oxygen, and baths. In a few moments, neither Stravinsky nor his entourage stood before Ivan.
On the far shore, beyond the window grating, the jolly springtime forest sat pretty in the midday sun, and the river sparkled nearby.